Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, Gabe, Giannis, and I, we are back on the mic for our regular weekly episode. We do not have a guest today. It's just us. But Gabe sent over a list of things he wanted to talk about. And one of them is this idea of U.S. drops from top.
It's not an idea. It's a headline. It sounds like a piece of news. It's not an idea.
Before we get into the headline and the factual data that Gabe has provided us, I just want to say thank you for listening to the podcast. You know, whether it's your first time listening or your 100th time listening, just want to say thank you. If you can, simple ask. If you get value from this podcast, rate it and review it. Definitely helps out the podcast. Share episodes that you get specific, you know, excitement over, whatever, with a friend. That's all we ask. But without further ado, Gabe, talk to me about how U.S. drops from top 20th happiest countries list in 2024 World Happiness Report. And is that fake or where can I find this at? What's going on here?
No, so I mean, it's a report that apparently...
Oh, here it is.
Yeah, it
Liz pulled it up for us.
Surveys a bunch of people. And I think the U.S. used to be in 16th place, according to this, of happiest country. And now I think it's 23rd. So 23rd. It dropped out of the top 20. But it's funny. It's not like an idea. It's just a piece of news. I thought it was interesting because, you know, we've talked about mental health a little bit. And clearly, I think that like people reporting, quote unquote, how happy they are plays into it. And like, I mean, I think you would agree. I think it's a trend that's going in the wrong direction. Like, wouldn't you want to live or know that like where you live is ranked like one of the happiest places there is? And I think that like, it's not super surprising to me if you like, you know, just go out and maybe look on social media and see some of the conversations people are having. I just think that it is a bummer to see something like this maybe reflect what does appear to be happening. And then where I saw the headline and where I read it was like, oh, what could possibly be the reason? And then it cited this other stat, which is, you know, Gen Z, which is a growing generation that make up who answers this survey. You know, they spend an average of 7 hours a day on their phone.
Dude, that's the problem. I mean, so I saw you list that. And so it's like, here's an example. Is the United States really any worse or better of a country to live in than X many years ago?
So first of all, completely not what I'm saying. The United States is the absolute best place to live.
No, I'm saying happiness. No, what I'm saying is like, are people really less happy? And I would say that the reason why like this Gen Z thing, it's because everybody's comparing themselves to each other. And it's like, what I'm saying is, I guess like people haven't changed that much other than the fact that they're consuming all this technology that makes them feel like they're living in a shitty world. Like, dude, if you're online, man, like it's just all negativity. So of course your happiness is going to go down. If the average person is spending 7 hours on their phone that's answering this, of course you're going to see negativity, you know, continue to increase. I guess the point I'm trying to make is like, I think that we are not doing ourselves any favors by consuming so much content online that makes you in general think that the world is falling apart and that your life sucks. Like in general, that's the type of stuff that comes across is what I gather.
No, for sure. I agree. And I think that beyond what you were saying, which is like, have things really changed for people? I mean, I think they have changed, that they've gotten better, right? Like it's so much more comfortable, convenient. Like we're in a better place now, you know, objectively in terms of like what you can afford and quality of life and whatever, especially if you start thinking like 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, like we have access to stuff now that like people would have loved to have had back then. But for some reason, when you actually go out and survey people on like, hey, how happy are you? How much of a purpose do you feel in your life? Like all of these things, the answers are more and more negative. So why is it that those things are going in the opposite direction? And I agree with you. Like it's not that it's a coincidence that now all these young people that are, you know, teenagers in their early 20s, so on and so forth, are like literally spending so much time on their phone. I spend so much time on my phone. It's something that I'm actively working on, but I can't imagine spending 7 hours a day on your phone and that being mostly on social media, mostly just seeing your peers, like, you know, and comparing yourself to people that are fitter, more successful, happier, like than you. Like, dude, how does that weigh on you? You know,
yeah, you gotta keep create boundaries around it. You know, it's something I'm definitely thinking about with the kids. Is like, what role does technology play in that? I mean,
that's what I wanted to ask. Yeah, I mean, it's like, how do we parent now?
Well, for Caden, I don't know, man. It's just every kid I think is different. But like for Caden, for example, like it's not really an issue for me. Like he doesn't really seem to have a desire. Like we bought him an Apple Watch because we want to be able to track him and we wanted him to be able to message us if he was at a friend's house and needed to get picked up or whatever. He never wears it. He doesn't have a phone. He's not keen on it. He doesn't care. He just wants to go play sports and be outside. But with girls, with Ava in particular, like there is that desire. And then all your friends are doing it. Like kind of like the video game conversation we had.
It's exactly
where all the friends are playing the video games. So like, for example, I was walking by the mall yesterday and I saw like a group of kids and all of them had their phones out doing something. Now they're together, but they're all doing something on their phone. But well, imagine if you're the person that doesn't want to be on their phone. Well, now you feel like the odd one out. It's like back in the day when at my age, like remember those, no, I always think you're way younger than me. You are younger than me, but
oh my god.
Do you remember like these little things? Like you use like a slammer and you would like slam down.
Dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm also like sure that you're not doing a good job explaining this.
I'm doing a terrible job explaining this. Damn it. It was like these little, someone listening to the podcast didn't know exactly what I'm talking about. They like these little discs, and then you'd have a slammer and you would like slam it down and see if it would flip over. Anyways, in either case. If you didn't have those things when you were back in the day as a kid, right, you would feel kind of out of place. Now, I think that same thing happens with phones because everybody else is having them. So how do you parent that? I don't know. I think it's going to be a constantly evolving situation, man, because, dude, that comparing yourself to other people and living in this virtual world that always seems so perfect, it doesn't do anything for your mental health but make you feel more anxious and whatever else about what's going on. And the proof is in the pudding. Ranking of happiness by people under 30 USA is number 62. People over 60 USA is number 10. Huh. That's interesting. Liz just gave us that statistic. Do you see that? So the ranking of happiness by people under 30 in the USA is 62nd. People over 60 though, it's 10. See, that's a good example.
So it's a young people problem. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It was just interesting, especially from like, you know, a lot of the things that I'm thinking about now as a parent of both a son and now, you know, any minute now, a daughter, you know, how I don't think it's too early to just start thinking about like, how am I going to navigate that stuff? Like, how are you going to navigate the conversation of like, but all my friends have it, or like, why can't I do this? And then also like one thing that's really top of mind is like, you know, what kind of example am I setting to even be able to say like, hey, you know, you shouldn't spend that much time on your phone if I'm on my phone, right? Like, I know that right now, you know, he might be too young to like specifically remember, but he sees everything, man. And like, I really try and catch myself when, you know, we are just sitting in the living room and he's playing on his own. Like he's not trying to interact with me or play with me. Like I'm going to pull out my phone. Cause that's just kind of like what you do when you're not doing anything. I'm trying to be a lot better about that. I'm trying to be a lot better about like, you know, if I get a message or an email or I want to answer something and we're on a walk, like it can wait until I get back home. Like, do I have to pull out my phone in that moment? Like what I'm trying to do now and be a little bit better at is I'm trying to have like places in the house that I use my phone and then places in the house where like, even during the day, cause I've been really good about at night, like it no longer comes into the bedroom. But like, for example, me and Ariel talked about this the other day, cause we both caught ourselves like the no more phones at the table, like during lunch or during dinner, like the phones have to be on the kitchen counter. Like we don't bring it to the actual table. That's been a helpful and an example of something we're trying to do, but that's kind of where my head's at with this right now is like, how am I ever going to have any footing to have rules around technology and screens if I myself don't seem to be following those things or spend so much time on them? And I think that I do need to start now, even though, you know, he's obviously super young, because it's not going to be like, oh, he's at the point now where he wants a phone and now I can make the change and it's going to matter. It's going to matter what he's seen forever.
For the last 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's helped us is, you know, we don't have like at the table and stuff like that. But one thing that's helped me, I think, is having a computer available. So I do think there's a difference between being on a computer and being on a phone. So one thing that's been helpful for me is if I'm using like a small little MacBook, to have that like out and about. Like I have that at our quote unquote like kitchen table, right? Or dining table. And I could sit there and be working on that. I do think that's different than if I'm like sitting on the couch on my phone. I could be doing the exact same thing, right? Answering emails, doing whatever. But being on a computer, I think insinuates more work instead of like more leisure. And so that's something that we've been trying to incorporate a little bit more, especially with the kids at the age they're at.
I get a sponsored ad for this thing. Maybe Liz can pull it up. It's called The Brick. Have you seen it?
No, but I've been getting a sponsored ad for a CCW, a concealed carry belt, like every 3 minutes. Dude, shows me what I've been looking at.
It's the most left field response I've ever gotten. But anyway, this thing called The Brick. So it's like a little, I guess it's like a sensor or magnet or something, but because you know how you can set screen time limits on your phone? And I've done that. But the problem is that literally all you have to hit is a button and ignore it, and you ignore it. And it's so easy to ignore it. But this thing, it's called a brick. Yeah,
I think 100% now I'm going to be getting ads for the, like, and anybody listening is going to get an ad for it.
But the way it works is you actually have to tap your phone to this physical thing. It's just a tiny thing to unlock certain apps. So the thinking is like, if you keep this thing in, like I would keep it in my office, and I've come very close to buying it many times. I think I might now that I'm talking about it and let you guys know how it goes. But like, I would keep it here in the office, and only if I literally tap my phone to this thing, does it unlock certain apps that I set up to be unlocked there. So it's just part of, you know, and it's, you know, you might think it's funny, but it goes back to like, a lot of the things that we talk about with, there it is.
Introducing The Brick, the device that temporarily removes distracting apps and their notifications from your phone, leaving only the powerful tools you choose. Now you don't have to take the distractions with you everywhere. Leave them behind with The Brick and engage with more of what matters.
Woo. I feel like now that we talked about it, I need to buy it. But anyway, so I think that it goes back to like even some of the nutrition stuff we've been talking about in that, you know, it's making the decisions before even having the opportunity to like let these things that have become such a habit like distract me from where I want to be. And I think that like, am I always going to need something like that? No, but it might be a good tool.
It could be a good tool, for sure.
It's just a reminder because it's then like if a I do scale, right.
With nutrition, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually you don't need the scale anymore. Like a food scale. Like, it'll you
just,
know what I mean?
Yeah. It'll just make me, I hope, like what I would want to get out of it is like the awareness of how many times I pull my phone out in a place where like I don't or shouldn't be checking Instagram, for example. And I notice it because I'm like, shit, like, you know, the brick isn't here to unlock those things. So it's like pretty inexpensive and it just comes with an app, but I might check it out.
Okay. Hey, check out The Brick. Let me know how that goes. It's kind of like the Matuthian or whatever. I've been pretty impressed with the.
I've been very impressed with the Matuthian tooth powder.
The tooth powder. I mean,
I had a buddy of mine, shout out to Coach Matt, one of the coaches here at Aftermath Strength. He texted me a picture yesterday that he got it too. He was like, you should talk to Saban and you guys should be getting commissions.
I mean, Ashley, I was like, I didn't think much of it, but I bought it. I think it was like $20 for the tooth powder. Right. Yeah. And I don't know, at the time I wasn't thinking much of it. I like Saban. I want to support him, blah, blah. And then she's like, dude, you paid $20 for a toothpaste. I was like, and then I thought about it more. I was like, shit, I did. And, but the tooth powder, it seems like that thing's going to last for a long ass time, dude.
It seems like it's going to last for a long time. And I do think you have to remember that like, there's a reason toothpaste is so dang cheap. And it's because you know, it's these companies that are making it that like, you know,
anyway, you get what you pay for.
Yeah. You get what you pay for, but also like, you know, these are literally the biggest companies on the planet that make stuff like toothpaste. So,
hey dude, you put down here, by the way, I was in the sauna today and my cold plunge stopped working. My breaker, like, I don't know what happened. And you know, I'm in the sauna and I'm all whatever. And, so I had Ashley hose me off, bro. That is not that enjoyable, man. Like when you get cold ass water out of a hose, it almost sucks more than a cold plunge. Yeah, like, because just like, it's just shitty. But that was my morning. So on another note, you said here, the Knicks are in the playoffs. Warriors are out. So I did not know that, but I'm a Bay Area guy and I'm definitely a fair weather fan when it comes to any sport, whether it's Niners, the Warriors, the Giants, if they're in the Sharks, if they're in like the playoffs, I all of a sudden start rocking my gear. If they're not, then I don't really pay much attention. So dude, what happened?
No, I mean, I'm a huge Fairweather Knicks fan. Everyone knows that I'm a huge Mets fan. That's, you know, during the good, bad, ugly, and all in between. But Knicks, like when they're doing good, I start paying a lot of attention to the Knicks. And
of course,
they're good this year, man. They're the number two seed. And then the Warriors just lost last night. So felt like a good time to give you a hard time. That
so the Warriors are out. They're done. They're so out. Lakers?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
They're out.
All right. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, but the Knicks, dude, the Knicks. This is our year. Maybe.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I know about the Warriors is like, I don't know. They're excited to go watch in person. I got a question for you. So this is embarrassing. I'm at a charity event the other day. And have you ever heard of Patrick Marleau? You ever heard the name?
I have not.
So this guy has been a San Jose Shark for like 25 years. And then he went on to go play for a couple other teams before he retired. So I'm at this charity event and I happen to be talking to him. And we started, you know, whatever. I was like, oh, what's going on? He's like, oh, yeah, I played hockey for a while. And then we started talking. I was like, oh, like how long were you in the NHL for? He's like 29 years. I'm like, holy shit. I was like, this guy must be legit in my mind, right? I'm thinking like you can't be a mediocre player and be in the NHL for 29 years, whatever it is. And then he goes, I was like, oh, you know, so I knew his name was Patrick.
9 years?
Dude, now I feel like I'm lying about that. Maybe, Liz, if you could see if Patrick Marleau played for 29, I feel like I'm lying now. But like, dude, that's a long ass time to play in the NHL. But I'm like, oh, what's your last name? And he's like, oh, Marleau. I was like, oh, I know exactly who you are. But it's a good example of like, I don't know how I got off on this tangent, but like, how you might know the name, but not the way the person looks, but the dedication of the craft for that long. I was blown away for how long this guy had been in the NHL for. Hopefully, let's see. Well, Liz, I mean, is going up.
No matter how long it is. So yeah, he was drafted in 1997. So yeah, I mean, that's over 20 years. I don't think it's quite 29, but that's a long freaking time. Well, it depends when he actually retired, I guess.
Look at there. He has stats from 2021. See, look at that. It's 97.
Through 21. So I don't think it was quite 29 years, but it was over 20 years, 24 years.
Dude, that's crazy, right? And so I was asking him like how it works. So it looks like he was with the San Jose Sharks forever. Then he went to Toronto and then he went to Pittsburgh Penguins and then came back to the Sharks for what I imagine to be like just
to retire with the year that he was with the team most of the time. Yeah.
I asked him though, I was like, hey man, how does it work? Is it like as simple as like, it's kind of like a, you know, unwritten rule that like, hey, if you commit yourself for 20 years to a team, like you'll just come back. He's like, well, it's not as simple as like that sounds, but yes, basically like you're going to retire as a Shark is it's just a known thing.
Yeah.
But dude, that's a long ass time to be in the NHL.
That's a long. And I don't know anything about hockey. It's probably the sport that I least got into. Again, same thing. Like if the New York Rangers are doing like really well, I'll watch them in the playoffs. And live hockey is actually really fun. And live hockey at the Madison Square Garden.
So that's what I was going to ask you, Gabe. What is your favorite sport to watch live? So it has to be
aside from baseball, because baseball is just my favorite period. Live TV, whatever. But aside from that, hockey live is super, super fun.
Dude, I think hockey live is probably my favorite sport to watch live. The rest of the family, we were talking about this. They said football. I think football on TV is actually really good.
I agree.
Hockey just doesn't do it justice, man. Like when you hear people just get smashed into the wall.
And,
like,
and no matter where you're sitting in hockey, I feel like
it's great. It
feels like you're closer.
Yeah.
To the rink. Like it's just the, like football, you know, you could be sitting somewhere like, I mean, you're so far from the game and what's going on. Hockey just feels like it's so much more intimate. People get so much more into it. There's like more cheering. I agree. I think hockey is awesome.
Yeah, dude. If you have not gone to a hockey game live, you're missing out on an experience for sure. I think yeah, we got to prioritize going back out there. You know what? I want to start exploring more sports to the kids, like at a professional or collegiate level. Like the other day we were at the park and we watched these guys playing cricket. And dude, I know nothing about cricket, but these guys were getting fired up. I mean, like, I don't even know how the game works. I don't know much about it. I just know the guy. Have you ever watched anybody play cricket before?
No.
Dude, so the pitcher basically like he sprints And then he throws the ball. It like hits the ground and then it comes up. And then the guy has the cricket paddle. But man, like when they got a hit, I don't even know what the hit represented. I know nothing about it, but the guys would like cheer like they won the Super Bowl. And it made me fired up because they were so fired up. So I ended up watching the game for a while. It was cool.
You know, one thing that at least now I plan to do with Shay and really looking forward to it is minor league baseball is like really fun.
Hella cheap too.
Yeah, because it's like, it's super affordable. So you can like sit down. And the cool thing is like, we can go up to Round Rock. So where the Rogue Invitational is, because that's a minor league team there. And then if you remember from the Rogue Invitational, like these parks tend to have so many activities around it because it's very much like a family experience, because people aren't necessarily going there because they're like super invested in the team and the games. Like this is minor league baseball. Like you're not like a diehard Round Rock Express fan, but right. They make it more of an experience then because, you know, not everyone's going to, right, I don't think anyone is like sitting at their seat like nine innings like watching the game. You know, there's like really cool restaurant, there's a playground, there's a pool, there are all these things. So that's like an hour away from us, so it's not super close, but it's close enough to where, you know, going to some minor league baseball games I think would be super fun.
Yeah, we've gone to quite a few of the San Jose Giants. It's super close to us. It's super cheap. I mean, it's like $5.
Yeah.
And
they just want you to go there and like buy the food, hang out, yeah, like do all the stuff. Yeah.
They have a bunch of like craft beers. Like it's great. But yeah, that's something we're going to prioritize more, especially all the schools around here, Stanford, you know, Santa Clara. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of universities where you could start exposing the kids to go check out, like, I don't know, for example, women's volleyball, women's soccer. Like I've never been to a, I don't know, like a diving competition. I've never been to one of those. Like that'd be cool. Like at a collegiate level to watch these people dive. Like, I don't know. That'd be awesome. So especially that's what we're going to do.
There's so much talent. I've been seeing a lot of highlights. So there's this account that I follow, John Boy, who does like really good baseball content, but now he's been reviewing some like college level softball and he makes it super exciting, but also like, softball just seems so exciting. Like there are some fucking awesome plays. There are some players that just like, they talk shit. They get amped. Like it's so much fun, man.
Yeah.
And it's cool. And it actually, so it segues into one of the things I wanted to talk about. So you obviously know who Caitlin Clark is, right?
No. So I saw you put this out. I don't know. So dude, I just saw.
How do you not know who Caitlin Clark is?
I mean, I'm telling you, I just saw a brief, like, quote unquote, news flash, Caitlin Clark, and then that's it. I have not looked into it. I don't know anything about it. I know she's a basketball player, right?
Yeah. So she is like the goat of goats. She beat, like, she crushed, didn't beat, like, crushed every possible basketball scoring record in the NCAA.
What team was she on?
Iowa.
Okay, I have seen her like, yeah, she was like out there like shooting three, like just dominating
she can't miss. And the whole thing was like, there was a big story last year because they went to the finals, Iowa did, against LSU, and there was like some shit talking and there was like a little bit of controversy there, whatever. She's an awesome player. This year she broke, like, it was her senior season, broke every record. The championship game of the NCAA tournament for women had more viewers, I don't remember, than, I don't think it was than the final for the men's, but it like, it had more viewers than a lot of other sporting events had in the past. Like a lot of people were very bought in to the women's tournament this year, something that's like relatively new. Women's sports like never get the amount of eyeballs as men's sports, but like her and how dominant she's been and her story have brought so much attention and eyeballs to the sport. Like she's put women's basketball on like a completely other level, which is awesome. And there have been all these headlines that came out just this week. There's like a ESPN posted the contract she signed as, yeah, like the goat of goats, dude. Like literally she is like generational talent. Got drafted first overall, obviously, in the WNBA draft. And the contract she signed is for 4 years, $330,000, I want to say. And yeah, so $338,000 over 4 years. So the first year she's literally making $76,000. And so obviously there's a lot of, you know, conversations out there about like, how can, you know, this generational talent in women's sports be getting paid what, like, I don't know, especially in California, is like a entry level salary for like, you know, in so many positions. And granted, like, you know, she's definitely going to be making significant money through endorsement deals and stuff. Like, she is very well known, and I think she's already made a good amount of money since you can now be paid as a collegiate athlete. So it's not like she's like, you know, by any means like struggling, but you know, you look at any male sports and people are getting $1 million just signing bonuses, not even their contract. Right. So I here's the thing. I think it's a good conversation because, like, on the one side, you get a lot of people that, you know, rightfully so, bring up the fact that, like, hey, people don't watch the WNBA. Like, the WNBA is nowhere near as popular as the NBA. I think it's great that, like, more eyeballs are coming into it now. I think that Caitlin Clark being a part of the league is definitely going to bring more attention to it. I hope that more fans buy tickets, buy jerseys, watch the games, because that's what's going to get players paid more, right? Yeah. Like, it's moving in the right direction. But I was genuinely surprised at how little that was. Like, if you would ask me, like, how much do you think she's going to make? I would have, you know, I don't know, maybe like $1 million, maybe like, you know, something else.
Yeah, look at this. The Caitlin Clark Experience delivered another television milestone as ESPN's coverage of the WNBA draft on Monday night averaged a record 2.45 million viewers. Viewership peaked at 3 million, ESPN said in a release Tuesday. So what I'm curious about is what the previous record was before that.
I don't even think they televised the WNBA draft.
Yeah, but you know, look, I think you brought
up really good. So there it is. So the audience was more than four times as many viewers when compared to last year's draft, which had 572,000 viewers.
But think about it like this, man. You got to kind of, things don't happen overnight. So take, for example, the conversation you and I are having. I had seen like a highlight of the player, right? But I don't really know much about her. And now you talking about her, I'm like, okay, now she's on my radar. Like, I'm kind of curious what she ends up doing in the NBA or WNBA, excuse me. And then, you know, more players like this come, or she brings more excitement. Then all of a sudden people get more engaged to other players that she might be playing against to see who they're battling. And that's kind of how this thing kind of builds momentum. If you look at it, it's kind of like CrossFit Games. Like, back in the day, you know, it started off where it's at. Then personalities start to grow it, and then more money comes, and then more money comes, and then more money comes. But maybe WNBA hasn't had that like catalyst that it needed to spark this like snowball effect. And maybe she is it. Because the team can only pay what the team can afford. If you're only drawing in, you know, $1 million a year on broadcasting revenue, you can't pay your team over that. Otherwise, you're gonna be losing money. So I don't know all the financials of a WNBA team, but I would say that in general, they don't make much money, so they can only afford what they can afford. You know what I mean? Like, she's only 100%. Worth what the team can what any team can afford. That being said, if people want players to make more money, whether that's in CrossFit, in soccer, in basketball, you name it. If people want those players to make more money, they need to create more eyeballs onto that sport so it could drive more advertising revenue. And it's interesting because, like, a lot of people I think will say, hey, these players need to get paid more. And I'll use CrossFit because I can't speak on everything. Like, hey, CrossFit athletes who are full-time need to make more money. Okay, we could all agree. But if that's the case, then we need to do whatever's possible to get as many eyes on the sport as we can. Otherwise, there is no money to be dished out.
For sure. And like, the biggest problem I have is people that just complain and like make it seem like, you know, there are malicious intent to there being this crazy disparity. I was surprised by how much of a difference there was.
It's pretty extreme. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I was genuinely surprised. Like, like 75K, like literally, like that is a starting salary in many positions. Like, if you're a software engineer, you know, you're making way more than that year one.
And she's like the GOAT, like
like undisputable generational talent, like the GOAT, broke every record. So, I mean, I was definitely surprised, but I think that, you know, it's one thing to just complain, and it's another thing to like try and be a part of the solution. Like, dude, I'm about to have a daughter. Like, I'm super excited for there to be athletes like Caitlin Clark that are drawing excitement to the sport, and that I can now, you know, hopefully bring my daughter to some WNBA games and enjoy women's sports to inspire her to be a part of women's sports. So anyway.
Yeah. Look at that statistic that Liz just put up. In the NBA, players took home an average annual salary of over $10 million US dollars. And the league's minimum salary is set at $1.12 million. And she's getting, you know, $75,000. Now, look, I agree with you. At the end of the day, you know, these people are not in this for charity. This is for money.
All right, guys, we're taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the most exciting thing that we've launched at Train Hard in a while, and that is the Train Protect Provide collection that is now live on the Train Hard shop. If you've been listening to the podcast or reading our emails, you've heard us talk about these three words: train, protect, provide. These are the three pillars that are at the foundation of everything we're trying to do here at Train Hard. Train, pretty self-explanatory. We train hard to be prepared for anything life is going to throw our way. Protect, it's not about going out there and looking for trouble. It's just about being ready in the case that trouble finds us. And then provide, which is probably the most meaningful one for me, isn't just about putting food on the table. It's not just about providing financially, but it's about being there and being present and being this force of stability for your family at all times and providing anything that they need at any time. And that's something that I aspire to do every single day as a dad and a husband. And I know it's something that's super important to Jay as well. So we're super excited to now have Train Protect Provide on some awesome, awesome apparel. The team took so much time to pick out some t-shirts, some crew necks, and some hoodies that are a little different than what we've done in the past, but are different in a really good way in that they are so comfortable and super versatile that you can work out in them or you can wear them out and they are gonna look great. So go to the shop right now, the Train Hard shop, check out the Train Protect Provide collection. And since you're listening to this on the podcast, use code podcast and that'll get you free shipping. So head over to the shop, check it out, but let's get back to the show.
It does draw an interesting comparison to people who dedicate their life to a specific craft and recognizing what is the revenue potential from that. I'll give you an example. If my daughter or son spoke later on, they said, hey, my daughter's been talking about two paths. One is to become a doctor. The other is become an environmental like scientist or something like that. I have to be real to her and explain to her, hey, the revenue potential in these two categories is different. And the lifestyle is different. If you choose to go this way, there is pros and cons on both sides. But just being real about where the money is at in career paths, I think is important. You know, if you want to become a drama or a dance major in a college, there's nothing wrong with that. You just need to know that where does that path lead you to? If you're a dance instructor, your potential for revenue is X. Whereas if you chose a different journey, maybe your revenue potential is Y. And it's not the exact same what we're talking about with basketball, but I guess the point is like just being real about the path you choose and the opportunities that you have and how much money you could actually make. It's something I talk about with my kids on a, you know, semi-regular basis when we talk about career paths.
And on that note, so I was listening to this podcast this morning. When I went on my early morning run, I thought it was awesome. I don't think we're going to get anywhere near close to covering kind of some of the things that we thought we were going to cover on this specifically. But I think that one thing that reminds me of is, you know, the guy, so Scott Galloway is a NYU professor, and he talks a lot about like the issues specifically afflicting like young people and specifically like young males in kind of the world we live in now. And one of the things that he talked about that I think is so true, and it plays into what you were saying about like having honest discussions with your kids about like, hey, this job can pay this much. And you just need to know that you can have a certain lifestyle here, certain lifestyle there. With that being said, you know, one of the things that parents are, maybe not all parents, but some parents feel like they failed as a parent or they'd be disappointed, is like kids going into trades. And I think that's so interesting because, dude, plumbers, electricians, like these people make so much money, like really good money. And also like you're only like a actual, like, you know, plumber, electrician, like actually doing the work and like grinding for like 5 years as an apprentice. Then you become a master electrician. Then you open your own business. And like literally all you're doing is signing off on jobs and like sending jobs. And these people have amazing livings. They're not in like thousands of dollars of school debt. And they're also providing a service that's like super fucking useful. Like they can actually do stuff. Like my dad's an electrician and like the skills that he has is just like, everyone needs it. I need it all the time. Like, he comes over and helps me all the time with handiwork stuff. And I'm not saying that everyone needs to go that route, but I do think that it's unfortunate that, you know, people will be so proud of their kids because they went to like a really good school and got like a marketing degree. But for some reason, it's lesser than if they want to take like, hey, I'm going to go to 2-year vocational school. I'm going to learn how to be an electrician. And that's what I want to do. Like, I like working with my hands. You know, this is what I want to do. And that would somehow be seen as less than. I think it's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I think there's going to be a shift there. So what you're talking about, there, it was the Rich Roll podcast with Scott Galloway, and I listened to it as well. And what he was specifically talking about when he talked about the trades is he compared US LinkedIn profiles. This was interesting to me, to the European LinkedIn profiles. I don't believe I'm butchering this. I believe it was 2% of young Americans or whatever place that they're an apprentice in their LinkedIn profile versus 10% in European countries. And what he alluded to was that people are almost,
ashamed
of having this apprentice approach. And I think that hopefully some of those tides are changing. He went on to elaborate quite a bit. I mean, I was pretty impressed. It's the first time I'd listened to a Rich Roll podcast and the first time I listened to Scott Galloway. But I was really intrigued by what he had to say. I thought he had some really cool concept. One thing that I thought was really interesting that he said is that with his sons, he tries to talk about them producing more than you're taking as a man. And so what he says is like, he'll talk to them now. His boys, if I'm not mistaken, are 10 and 13. So my son's 10, my daughter's 13. So very similar ages. And he talks about, hey, right now, son, John, you are taking more than you're producing. Mom and dad are giving you all these things and you are accepting them, whether it's love, money, this, that, you're taking more than you're giving back to society right now. And that's okay. But eventually his goal and their goal should be to produce more for society than they're taking. And I really liked that analogy, like producing more, not only from monetarily, but just giving more
value, to people. Just value, man.
Giving more value. That's what he talked about. Just giving more than what you're taking from society. And if that's that was like the true testament of what he was saying is like building a good, you know, healthy young man is one that is producing more for society than is taking. I like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, there was so much good stuff in this podcast, but I that's one of the things that I wrote down too. So I love that you put that down, but like productivity surplus, right? Like just being more productive than you're taking away. Because yeah, man, in the beginning, like it's your parents giving you everything. It's like, you know, he mentioned schools too. Like you're going to a traditional school. Like there's a system that's trying to give you the tools, the education that at some point you should pay back tenfold. Like all of us are trying to make an investment in the future generation to try and make sure that they get to the point where they're then giving back so much more than the input that was put in to like raise them into like productive members of society. Like that should be the goal.
Dude. Yeah. I enjoyed it so far. If you haven't checked it out, it's the Rich Roll podcast with Scott Galloway. I actually sent it to a few friends this morning. There's a lot more to unpack there. One of them in particular that he talks about is what's lacking in society these days is more men to help out boys. He goes on to talk about like Michael Jackson and others kind of gave it a bad rap, like where they're kind of taking it to an extreme, obviously, where like, for example.
So, well, yeah. Well, the thing is like, yeah, because he said that Michael Jackson and the Catholic Church, like, have made it so that it's this very strange thing for you as like an adult male to take any interest in
a younger boy
that isn't your own son. Like right. Very strange, big red flags go up. But yeah, he was saying that like, that's just like mentorship was a very healthy part of society back in the day. Dude. Like you taking a boy under your wing, teaching in the ways and you know, it not necessarily having to be like your kin, your son.
Yeah, I text Matt Chan here. I'll tell you the exact text that I just, Matt Chan. I was like, hey, he sent me a Wyoming antelope video from like a hunting video. And I said, I'll check it out. Just got back from Tahoe with Caden. And then he says, hey, I said to him, he likes hard stuff and needs more men like you around to help guide him. That's what I said. And he wrote, count me in. Like, basically, like I said to Matt Chan, like, I need more guys like you around my son to help guide. Like, I can't do everything. I need people like him. I need people like other dads around so that they can get other influences from people who I think are embodying what I want to see from him as a young man. So I think we need more of that. But to your point or his point, like, it's gotten, you know.
Yeah. And I think that that's where, you know, it ties into past conversations that we've had about like the importance of coaches, right? Like, I think sports coaches can play a huge role in that respect and making sure that you're picking the right other men that play like a mentorship role in your kids' lives is so important. And that just comes down to like, you know, being involved, like not just, you know, blindly dropping your kid off at sports practice, but like, who is the coach that's spending, you know, 2 hours, three times a week with your kid? What are his values? What does he stand for? What is he teaching? How does he teach it? You know, does he lose his cool, right? Does he stay calm and collected? All of those things, I think, are things that you should put a lot of weight on and be vetting out for this exact reason.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, as I was checking the text with Matt Chan, I looked, Ashley texted me. She goes, I overheard you talking. It was Pogs that we were talking about. Have you ever heard of Pogs? No, you don't know what those are?
Liz, still doesn't ring a bell.
No,
no, so but Pogs, not now Liz can bring it up.
Yeah, Pogs were like, this is aging me. And there's people that are listening, they're going to be like, I know what Pogs are. There were these little things, and you would have these slammers, and you would battle people at class, but it's like the old school. Pogs.
Yes, give me Pogs. Oh, my God.
This was the old school cell phone back in the day.
Dude, I've never seen this.
Dude, so I can't remember exactly how you play, but
What are you slamming against the ground? I think that's literally just how you played with it.
No, I think you would like watch a video, Liz. I think what you did is you like stack them up, and I think you would like stack them up, and then you would like battle how to play Pogs. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Welcome to this Yuri Retro video.
Let's see.
Right, I don't think we have time for this whole video.
Yeah, we might not have time for this. But this might be for another episode. But basically, I think you stack them up and then you hit it. Watch. See? You slam it with the slammer.
This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I got to look into this more. I saw a video while Liz was searching it. It said like, kids today react to 90s Pogs. I bet you that's a pretty funny video too. Kids will be like, what the heck is this?
Today, you know, our episode needed to be a little bit shorter than usual. I have to take off, but I do want to say, I really appreciate having Liz. She's been working with us at NC Fit and at Train Hard for a while now, and lives in the great state of Oklahoma. And she's actually like behind the scenes helping us with the podcast right now, and it makes our life way easier. So I just want to say big shout out to Liz,
producer Liz.
Dude, there's so much more we could unpack on that Rich Roll podcast. I feel like, I know this is a shorter episode, but we should circle back on that on the next time you and I talk, because there was a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, let's do it, man. But that was a good one.
Dude, well, hey, lots of fun chatting today. I hope everybody's, you know, doing well. We have some new merch that just dropped in the shop. Train, Protect, Provide series. It's something that's, you know, they're not just words to me. They're something I really try and live by. And you know, I hear it popping up even in more in other circles where people are like, hey, like even on the Rich Roll podcast,
he said
protect, provide, and procreate. We don't need to go into the whatever. Right. But that's what he said. I was like, all right, I mean, fair enough. But our new series just dropped on the shop. So make sure to check out th.fit. All the links are in the podcast show notes for our new merch. I'm wearing one actually right now if you're watching this online. But yeah, it's great. And yeah, as we said earlier in the show, if you get value from these, make sure to check out the previous episodes. We have a ton of awesome guests, and leave us a rating and review. Any kind of closing remarks there, Gabe?
No, man, this is a fun one. I'm excited to dive into some of the stuff that we listened to on that podcast a little bit more, but we'll do that next episode.
Dude, so go check out the pogs. Talk to you later.